Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right, first, thank you very much for that, Aaron, and just want to be completely sure with people that I don't work for the UK Border Agency or answer for them. So,
No, sure.
I'll let you to think about that. Thanks for the invite to come along today. Just picking up on some of the things that Paul was saying there, that I would agree with Paul absolutely that the public-private divide is less and less relevant and makes less and less sense to talk about that. So I'm going to focus on the alternative providers, as we like to call them. What you call the other bit that aren't alternative providers, I'll let you think about that as well. And also just to say that in what I'm going to say here is that QAA is doing its bit, if you like, to level the playing field. Or try and level the playing field. I think the Minister is keen to make sure that there is a more level playing field, not to create an absolutely level playing field, because, of course, we know that level playing fields don't exist in any market that I've ever observed or on any football field either. There are three things I want to talk to, say something about today. It's all about educational oversight. Educational oversight in 2012. Secondly, educational oversight in 2013 and what we're thinking about. And also developing relationships with alternative providers. So those are the three things that I'd like to talk about. And I guess these slides are turning over as we talk. Is that right?
There should be a clicker up.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry, I missed that. Okay. Right. Okay. There we are. Ah, good. Okay. I'm with it. Okay. So those are the three things I want to talk about. Of course, a bit of an advert about what QAA is about for those who are not familiar with QAA. Been in existence since 1997, and no, I wasn't there if you're trying to do the maths. I did do 2 years out for good behaviour somewhere in that decade. Which is very informative working in a university. Since its inception, QAA has reported on the management of academic standards of UK higher education and the quality of learning opportunities, and increasingly on the reliance that can be placed in published information that providers produce about themselves. Our interest is not only in UKHE, it's increasingly focused on UKHE delivered abroad, where there are, latest figures suggest, 570,000 students studying on UK awards abroad. So increasingly our work is looking at that. And of course, with the whole UKBA dimension, then we're producing reports related to those students who are coming to the UK to study with private providers. The other thing to say about QAA is that it's the custodian of the key reference points, in particular the quality code and the framework for higher education qualifications. Just to be clear, we don't write those reference points. We get people from the sector, and I'm sure many of you have been involved in that process, to write them. We merely sort of maintain them and update them with the help of people from the sector as need be as we go along. We use those extensively in reviews. Our review teams use them to come to the judgments about the management of standards and quality in providers. So, what have we been up to in 2012? As you're aware, I'm sure it sounds like you've been having some discussions about UKBA, that in March 2011, as part of the changes to the Tier 4 sponsorship arrangements, QAA was recognised, not contracted or appointed in any way, but recognised by UKBA as a designated provider. In future, all providers, including alternative providers of higher education, wishing to sponsor international students would have to undergo a review with QAA. So if the majority of their students were in higher education provision, then they needed to undergo a review with QAA in order to maintain their highly trusted sponsor status. In response to that, we designed three review methods for different categories of applicants. The three categories were the embedded colleges, so the likes of Navitas, Study Group or Bellaby's, and Kaplan International. That was one grouping. Second grouping was for foreign providers and study abroad providers, of which we reviewed 16 of them, such as Holt And then the third grouping were the sort of more traditional, if you like, independent or private colleges offering higher education awards in the UK. The methods that we developed were comparable to the other methods that we have used in the past for further education colleges and in HEIs. The focus of all our reviews, if you trouble yourselves to read some of the reports, is on the management of academic standards, the quality enhancement of learning opportunities, and the reliance that can be placed in published information about the programmes offered by a provider. Now, all the providers had to undergo a review by the end of 2012 if they wished to maintain their highly trusted sponsor status. So we had to complete the review schedule by the end of 2012. So we had about 400 there were potentially 400 colleges that could have applied, we reckon, to QAA for review bias as part of this educational oversight programme. We ended up with about 250 applications, and the number sort of moved around a bit because some providers we transferred across to the Independent Schools Inspectorate, and we ended up completing 178 reviews. So you can see that there's about 60% fallout there of colleges that potentially could have come to QAA. And in terms of the ones that actually completed their reviews, of those 178, there were 20 near miss, some of whom have disappeared altogether from our mailings, shall we say, and some of which are still with us and undergoing a re-review in the next few months. So those are the sort of raw figures. All of those, that 20, were in the private provider sector, if you like. They weren't in the embedded college sector or in the study abroad or foreign providers. As a learning organisation, part of the higher education sector, we always like to reflect as soon as we can, make sure that what we're doing is useful and relevant, not only to students who are our main focus, but also to the provider and also to our reviewers. All our reviews are peer reviews, undertaken by peers of people working in the sector. For these particular providers, we've recruited an extra 70 reviewers, 50 of whom were from the private sector, and we'll be soon looking for some more reviewers from the private sector for anybody who's interested in applying. Look on our website. So what we do in terms of evaluation is that we ask all providers to complete an evaluation form after the report is published, asking obvious key questions, and then we follow that up in focus groups. Now, this contains some of the raw data, I suppose, that 86% of respondents across all three methods agreed that the review achieved its aims. The aims were that to safeguard academic standards and quality, and to enhance the reputation of UKHE, to promote partnership working between providers, their awarding bodies or awarding organisations and students, and thirdly, to provide information that is useful to applicants, students and other interested parties. So for providers, that 86% of people thought that those aims had been achieved. 83% of respondents thought communication throughout the review process was good, so those who have traditionally been reviewed by us would recognise those figures, I think, where we work hard to try and make sure that providers start from the same starting point as reviewers, so there are no hidden agendas in any QAA review. All reviews involve providers sending in a self-evaluation about 3 months beforehand, certainly for educational oversight reviews. And again, most of these thought this was useful. And I think that reflects our belief that quality assurance is a process rather than an event. And actually a huge amount of benefit in my experience of these things is that is actually achieved prior to the actual review visit. The review visit, a bit nerve-wracking, we understand that. You don't want anything to go wrong, but it won't go wrong if all the good work has been done in advance. A bit like wallpapering, as I often think about, although I don't do it anymore, living in a modern house. Good idea. 95% of reviewers and review coordinators thought the student submission was balanced and relevant. That's another aspect of all our reviews that we invite the representative students to send in a student submission, which can be confidential if they so choose it is, choose it to be. We didn't have any requests for them to be confidential, and we got surprisingly good student submissions. I suppose we were surprised, but we shouldn't have been surprised, because actually private students for a long time have been fee-paying students, and so they're a bit, possibly a bit more demanding of their providers than in the public sector. And that, I would say that was certainly true in further education colleges, maybe not so much in HEIs. So student submissions, although we didn't have one for every review, we would have liked more, were generally felt to be useful by the reviewers. When we publish the report, there are usually features of good practice and recommendations in the reports, and providers were required to send in their action plan to be published alongside their report. Important to stress, it's their action plan. They often call it QAA's action plan. It's, we just publish it, we don't own it. It's for them to work on and to think about their approach to quality assurance. And what I suppose one of the aims of the whole process is to embed a culture of reflection in private providers, which is commonplace in our experience at QAA across the public sector, but is not so much apparent in many parts of the alternative provider section, shall I say. And 93% of respondents agreed that the report was useful to the provider. So, again, yeah, these are very positive figures, and from my perspective, were reassuring that we were doing something that had many benefits, not only for students but also for providers. And while a lot of them were very apprehensive about coming within the remit of QAA, it's pleasing to see that many of them have seen that there are more than there is more than just getting HDS benefit out of this process. Okay, what are we doing in 2013? Then, for those 20 or so providers who didn't achieve in 2012, then we're undertaking re-reviews for those who have requested us to take a re-review. We've had another. We'll be undertaking about 10 to 12 new reviews in 2013 of colleges that have applied in 2012 for review in 2013. And also, as a result of the Home Office request that all providers are visited on a risk-based annually, then we're undertaking annual monitoring visits of all those providers that are still with us. So it looks like about 178, but we're having reviewed them, but we've already lost some more along the way. So we're seeing a shrinking number of private or alternative providers out there. So those have started out of the 46 annual returns that we've received so far, which is a sort of preliminary documentation. All of those have undergone an annual monitoring visit. There are some triggers set by the Home Office and UKBA which would trigger a full review, and that refers to where there's been a significant increase in students, change of ownership, or a significant change of provision. So there's only been one of those where a full review is going to result. You'll also be aware that the Department of Business's consultation on alternative providers and funding for student numbers, that those alternative providers are currently outside of the QAA reviews, but on the listed bodies, will be required to undergo a review, and we're working with DBIS on working out when that will and how that will operate. We expect it to commence in the autumn, the reviews of those providers, but we'll, you'll obviously be carefully watching the DBIS website if you're an alternative provider. Okay, we're also thinking about our relationships, as I think it's probably a current theme that you've been following this morning, is that the higher education sector is changing increasingly rapidly, I think it would be fair to say, and we're thinking about how we engage with all our providers. And like I say, I think for the perhaps the first 15 years of QAA's life, it was pretty easy because we were dealing with the public or the traditional or the whatever, the HEI sector and the FECs. That's no longer the case, that education oversight providers make up about a third to a half of our the providers that we engage with. So we have to think a lot more about the way that we engage with these providers. And because they're paying a direct fee for us, to us for their reviews, they're kind of more demanding, and you would expect that. So QAA is responding to that as best it can. Just to, one way in which we're thinking about that is that we recognise that some providers, and we've already had some of the education oversight providers become voluntary subscribers to QAA, and therefore they would undergo the same review mechanism as a traditional HEI. Others are already talking to us about going for degree awarding powers, not necessarily now, but in the next year or two or more, actually. In fact, there is one that is keen to go down that route very soon, probably in 2014. So we're thinking a bit more about that. For those institutions who want to go down the degree awarding powers, taught degree awarding powers route, then you need to look on the DBIS for the criteria, but the key things are that you need to have been delivering for at least four consecutive years, and a majority of your provision is HE, but other than that, all other bets are off. So... but, again, that's an area that is owned by the Department of Business, and we merely operate a degree awarding powers scrutiny process for those providers who choose to come forward for it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.